You are about to listen to one of Brandon Sanderson's patented Crazy Ideas trademark. For those who don't know, Writing Excuses is an internet radio program that I co-host with other wonderful people, namely Mary Robinette Cole, Howard Taylor, and Dan Wells. I wanted to brainstorm a story on one episode, write that story, then provide it for everyone to read afterward. We could workshop each story on another episode, then release an anthology with both the first drafts and the final drafts, giving readers an unprecedented look at the process of creating a story. Go forth and enjoy.
They watched the distant glow brighten while the wind played around her, lifting her scarf and tickling her with the ends. No one seemed inclined to go to bed as they raced across the ocean toward landfall. The light from the city was like nothing she had seen before. It was cool and silvery as though a glow disk were reflecting in a polished metal mirror. It grew brighter by the minute. In the crow's nest, a sailor pointed to the horizon. His words were snatched away by the wind. When she looked back to where he pointed, Caton's heart seized. A low mound of light had emerged above the horizon. It was not city lights, but a single broad arc that glowed with an unearthly light. She tried to make sense of the size, but could not grasp the distances.
How big is that?
I am not certain. Pardon.
With a half bow, Stillian made his way to the foot of the mainmast.
Ahoy, the crow's nest! Give me the measurements!
The wind blew the answer away from her, but the answer caused the captain to spin abruptly and stare at the horizon. She crossed the deck to where the captain stood.
What is the matter?
It's the measurements. They cannot be correct.
But surely you can't tell from so far away.
But we can. When we see another ship upon the horizon or land, we need to be able to calculate how large it is and how far away. This is vast.
Cole, the drug interaction between these three products is going to extend human lifespan, maybe by a full order of magnitude. Old age deterioration is going to go away. You and I will live to see the 22nd century. And I'm not betting against seeing the 30th.
I think about that for a moment. If this is true...
Sir, are you sure this works?
Quite sure. We've got a lab full of 8-year-old white mice, and we're 3 years into some secret trials on in-house volunteers, including me. I've never felt better, and my eyesight has improved as the lenses in my eyes regained their youthful flexibility.
Obviously, this secret is worth way more than just $1 billion.
There's more. We've got a brain trust positioning the company for the long game. We already know what the short-term future looks like. When the news breaks that this three-drug interaction extends the human lifespan, the entire product line will be nationalized by overwhelming popular demand, probably in a special legislative session. But before the United States does that, half a dozen other countries will already have deployed it within their national healthcare systems. We won't own any of it.
I nod. As predictions go, this makes perfect sense. There might be some small variations, but the end result sounds spot on.
So, the only way for us to make money is for us to be pre-positioned in other fields. That team is preparing us to capitalize on the disruptions introduced by an order of magnitude increase in human longevity.
I get it. You're not planning to get rich selling immortality. You're going to get rich helping the human race make the transition to immortality.
How valuable do you think this secret is?
In numbers? I can't count that high. You don't need to be protected from competitors. You need to secure yourself against governments. They'll break all their own laws and empty their treasuries to control this if they think they can.
Exactly.
Sir, my team is good, but if a sovereign state decides to pull a hostile takeover, the only thing we can do for you is shoot you before they have a chance to begin interrogating. And they'll probably just take us down before we see them coming. You need an army and a bunker.
Those aren't realistic options.
Oh, I know that. I'm already contemplating expanded perimeters, plainclothes agents, dead man switch alarms. And of course, I'm even more concerned about why you push the panic button.
Yes, about that. The intruder, I never described him to you.
I figured you'd get around to it.
It was death.
We came up just in time to see a wrinkly green 3-year-old beating the living hell out of the engineer's truck. And I want to be as clear as possible about this so there's no misunderstanding. When I say the living hell, I mean the living, breathing, ever-loving hell. He was remarkably spry, that three-year-old, naked as can be, and jumping around that truck like he was on springs. And everywhere he touched it, the truck fell apart. Not just fell apart, burst apart. Two quick leaps took him from the ground to the fender to the top of the grill, and the fender fell off before his toes even touched down on the hood. He reached out with one hand and grabbed the headlight, and somehow both headlights exploded. Not just the one he touched, but both of them simultaneously. The latch on the hood failed suddenly, spectacularly, launching the little green something in the air, while below him the now exposed engine erupted in a modern dance exhibition of bursting caps and hoses, each cylinder and compartment blowing off more steam than they could possibly have been holding. The windshield cracked as the green thing sailed over it, and all I could see inside were the two engineers digging through their packs like madmen, their faces white with fear. My crew and I ran toward them, racing to help. And as I ran, I raised my rifle to fire at the little green thing dancing madly on the roof. The trigger fell off in my hand, and then the stock, and then the entire gun seemed to field strip itself in a cascade of oily gunmetal. The bullets spat and jumped on the ground like popcorn, their charges exploding impossibly in the dry dirt of the brambles. My driver reached the truck's door and yanked on the handle. I expected the handle to come off, but was surprised to see the entire door come flying off.
The AVR slept, and that gave opportunity to the most dangerous of the island's predators. Sock spread her wings, leaning down, head darting back and forth. The sound always made her tremble. It did the same to Dusk. He rose, placing Sock on his shoulder. He turned and almost stumbled as he saw his corpse at his feet. He came alert immediately.
What is it? Vines in the tree branches? A spider dropping quietly from above?
There wasn't supposed to be anything in his safe camp that could kill him. It was as if Sock was in pain. It wasn't just his AVR. All around, echoing in the distance from both near and far, wild AVR squawked. Dusk spun about, holding his hands to his ears, eyes wide as corpses appeared around him. They piled high, one atop another, some bloated, some bloody, some skeletal, haunting him, dozens upon dozens. He dropped to his knees. That put him eye to eye with one of his corpses. Only this one was not quite dead. Blood dripped from its lips as it tried to speak, mouthing words that Dusk did not understand. It vanished. They all did. Every last one. He spun about, wild, but saw no bodies. His flock settled back into their nests. Dusk's heart was racing. He felt tense, as if at any moment a shadow would explode from the blackness around his camp and consume him. He anticipated it, felt it coming. He wanted to run somewhere.
What was it?
In all of his years with Sock, he had never seen anything like it.
What could have upset all of the AVR at once?
Was it the night maw he had heard?
Don't be foolish. This was different. Different from anything you've seen. Different from anything that has been seen on Pudgy. What? What has changed?